Hello, welcome to the Beyond Blocks podcast, a podcast about Drupal, PHP, open source, and related software development topics. I'm Oliver Davis, and tonight I'm here with guest Ryan Sraba. Hi, Ryan. It's great to have you
Hello.
on the show.
Thanks for having me on.
Can you share a bit about yourself and what you do for the audience?
Oh, sure, yeah. So I'm Ryan Zarama. I'm the CEO at Centauro, which is the company that maintains, supports, and develops large sites with Drupal Commerce. We're definitely not the only company building sites with Drupal Commerce, but we do include all of the maintainers of Commerce Core and a variety of the primary contributed modules within our teams. So,
Okay.
yeah, that's my day job is mostly sales and marketing. How do I convince people to use Drupal Commerce, convince people using Drupal Commerce to work with us to make it even better for them, and just continue to explain and position Drupal Commerce in the market where we're a bit of an aberration. A lot of education to do there.
Definitely. Yeah, I saw. I think the last time I saw you was at DrupalCon in Lille briefly. How was your DrupalCon?
It was great. I really enjoyed walking all over Lille. Whenever we first arrived, myself and my colleagues from Serbia who met me there, we were so just over the travel day that we walked everywhere, including I accidentally tried to walk into what is apparently an active duty military installation in that that
Okay.
Star Fort, and I was like, oh, I just walk right in and some people start, shouting and waving me back. Much nicer, honestly, than if I had tried to accidentally traipse into a military installation in the United States.
Yeah, I tried to spend a bit of time. I remember speaking to people beforehand and say, oh, I've been to Lille or Barcelona or LA or anywhere. And yeah, I only really see the airport. And then the conference center, and that's about it. So it's always nice to try and get out a little bit and see kind of
Absolutely.
the surrounding area.
Yeah, and Barcelona will be good for that, of course, in September. That's a great walk-in city.
Were you presenting anything at DrupalCon this year, or are you just there as an attendee?
So I in Lille or
Lille.
this year?
Lille?
No,
Lille Buzz?
we did not present anything. We sponsored, but we were primarily just there to attend and to connect with the other sponsors. So I actually ceded my booth space to one of our development partners, Lemberg Solutions. I let them take it over, and then I spent my time mostly in other people's booths and attending a few sessions of interest.
Oh, that's interesting. I think the
A
first time I
guerrilla
actually met you,
campaign.
well, if it works, I suppose. I think the first time I think we actually met in person was at DrupalCon in Prague, and like not the most recent one, but the one in 2013, I
Yeah,
think.
okay. Oh, great.
Seem to remember we were there. I was there working for an agency, and we were doing some Drupal commerce. I think I was there asking you some questions, I think. And
Which
if I,
agency was it at the time?
president of the agency was I was working for there, so they were
Okay.
UK and UK, and they did some others, Australia, some other places. They did some, but I was there as a Drupal developer, and we were doing evaluating commerce. I'd used it before, but there was a
Okay.
particular pitch or there was something I remember me to try and. We were thinking about, I thought, oh, I'll ask them when I'm in Prague. And yeah, I remember asking you, and I think it must be Matt Boyan, probably.
Yeah.
If I remember rightly, helped you to unpack some of the standard with asking questions at the same time or something. It could be
Yeah.
my memory might be a bit fuzzy, but yeah.
That was a good time. That was my first time ever going to Prague. I enjoyed going back then whenever we did have the second con there, because I knew my way around town a little bit. Oh wait. We haven't done Prague twice, we've done Amsterdam twice. Okay, so I have not been back to Prague yet.
Okay.
Okay, my memory gets hazy after too many of these events, I guess. But no, I had a great time, including just kind of randomly. No, we have done Prague twice. What am I talking about? That we went, because we went back to this like random little underground Irish pub. There's Irish pubs all over Prague for some reason, and so we just ended up in this random underground pub to celebrate Nikola Couture Kotnik's birthday. And there's just this two-piece band playing a lot of Brit rock and some American rock and roll. It was fantastic. But I was glad to go back to and stay in a different part of town, a little bit nicer, and have a bit nicer of a conference center this time around.
Yeah, I did like the Lille center. Yeah, it was Prague last year, so I didn't do to the, go to the last one, but the one before that I think must have been 2013. It was the first one that I'd been to. I've been to Drupal Camp London as my first sort of conference, and then did the DrupalCon that year as well. And yeah, so yeah, that was my first sort of big conference for Prague. So yeah, that's how I got involved and ended up there. Funny story, but I was there going, oh mate, I've done some contrib work, but wanted to do some core contribution work. Went up to the mentor table and said, so what's this mentored sprint contribution thing? And they're like, can you use Git? Yes. Can you use macOS and Linux and Windows? Yes. Have a mentor. So I ended up mentoring people, which was, yeah, quite a funny introduction for me to get into it that way.
Awesome.
So what was your, how did you get into to software development and Drupal and web dev?
Oh man, software development in general, I go back to we'll call it indie game development. We dabbled in game development in our Commodore 64 128 back in the day. Eventually the 8086, we graduated to GW Basic, and then eventually ended up with our first Windows machine where we discovered Q Basic. And so I spent, I don't know, a decade just making games in Q Basic, Quick Basic, and then an open source derivative that was 64-bit called Free Basic, which is still an active, successful project to this day. I just liked making games all through college. We just make games, share them with my friends. I worked on MUDs as well, so I knew C syntax and some lower level programming thanks to that. And so after college, I went to work at this company called Vidito Refrigeration just because a friend was there. And I literally was just in charge of editing eBay listings and managing Dreamweaver templates. And that's it for like thousands of SKUs. That was my job. I was the product catalog manager. But we were on OS Commerce at the time. My boss, being an open source enthusiast, when he sees me sharing games that I'm making, he says, "Oh, you can program here. Take this over for me." And so the rest was history. That was around like late 2005, early 06. I just started managing this OS Commerce site and got my first taste of open source contribution when I wrote like a couple of original plugins for OS Commerce, including, I think it was called Google Wallet at the time. Maybe it was Google Checkout. I can't remember which one. Probably Google Checkout. But she just got some early experience, like, okay, what does it mean to write code and to give it away and then to engage people for support and do this stuff? Or really, it's a real mind shift. How do I write code that is intended to be used, expanded upon, improved, integrated with by other people? It's the difference between making a game and it's all self-contained and you just ship an exe and some assets, or making a game that's designed to be modded. Very different architecture, very different concerns, and it requires much more, I think, discipline out of the developer to make sure that people are able to interface with your code. So I think Drupal has been great for me in that regard, and if anything, it's reinforced for me numerous times over that, the best code isn't the most novel, it isn't the most compact, it's the most easily readable and easily extendable. And that was evident, say in Drupal Commerce, where we would follow core Drupal 7 development patterns, even if we thought they were inconsistent or detrimental. It's like, no, it's better for us to at least be doing things oddly the same way as Drupal core than it is to be better and novel. And so therefore, a lot more people were, say, able to work with Drupal Commerce at the time than were able to contribute to rules, which was like OO PHP before anybody even knew what object-oriented PHP was. And so that was the arc. We built that company starting in 2009. We built our company, Commerce Guys, starting in 09, whenever I was ready to get out of the refrigerator blender sales company into an actual software development company. And I looked at other, Drupal companies as options, but seemed like we had a good thing going with e-commerce on Drupal. So kind of been riding that horse now for 15 years. In fact, we just hit our anniversary. February 1 is kind of what I regard as the anniversary of the business.
Yeah, congrats. Yeah, that's yeah, a little bit similar actually. My first job after doing so, I finished school and then I went and did some qualifications through like an apprenticeship, a traineeship, and then the first company I went and the placement for was a laptop computer repair company. We bought laptops from banks and building societies and things and refurbished them and then sold them on to students primarily, but not exclusively. And that site was managed through a thing called Actinic, if I remember rightly. So yeah, I remember putting in all these products and everything whilst we were there, and the orders would go through this website. And at some point, they wanted to launch a second site that was not. People would always be ringing up and going, "Do you only sell to students? Do you need a student ID number or anything?" And we're like, "No," but that it was very much marketed to students and
Yeah.
laptops from £79 or something. And then I remember we had a guy come in and was doing some colours and some coding of some description. I can't remember exactly, but I do wonder then. I didn't get into web dev or development for another few years, but I do wonder if that's where I sort of got sort of exposed to it first of
The
all. Maybe,
spark.
yeah, maybe it's quite interesting. So,
Yeah. But I
interesting
think
thought.
it just takes, it takes one connection and a little bit of imagination, and you can see yourself doing it. Like the person I am today, if I was looking at a 25-year-old, or well, how old was I, 26-year-old kid, not really a kid at that point. How old was I really? I was 23. I was 1 year out of college, and say, hey, you could probably figure out e-commerce stuff, right? Cool. Why don't you take over maintenance of this like PCI compliant multi-million dollar e-commerce company for me? Okay, why not? I just dove in because I was ignorant of what I didn't know. But I also, I do feel like it was a time of early growth and early advancement. Like PHP itself wasn't as rigorous a field back then, and all you needed to learn was on PHP.net. I mean, that's literally my only resource for learning PHP. It was just PHP.net. I don't think Stack Overflow was a thing yet, or if it was, I wasn't on it. And then just looking at existing code. So, okay, well, I don't know. I'm sure Drupal does this somewhere. Let's just open up Drupal and see how they did it. Okay, neat. Let's go over here. And so maybe I shouldn't be too hard on junior developers today, given I was able to build an Uber card with 1 year of PHP, JavaScript, and whatever experience under my belt.
Yeah, do some mentoring again. I've decided to do my third cohort with this boot camp. Just started this week actually, and yeah, it's like 16-week free then boot camp, and it'll go from like most of them from zero code to employable at the end. And yeah, we've done a hack day recently a couple of weeks ago. I was there for, and yeah, hope get some of these people off on their journeys now and then, get them coding and to see some of the things
Yeah.
they've been building during that day, but also since. One of the guys are posting the thing today, and it's like, oh, that's really cool that he's got this idea, and then just like now he can build it and start using it or sharing it with people. I think it's a superpower to be able to take these ideas and actually code them.
Yeah. I think it's somewhat equivalent, and I'm going to use a construction analogy because my neighbors are building their house right now. It's somewhat equivalent to it's the classical trades. I honestly, I wish I knew how to pour concrete, build a foundation, and then frame a cabin, because I would go do that out at my hunting property right now if I had those skills, but I don't. But it wouldn't take long for me to learn it. If I took a 13-week course on the essential trades for erecting a cabin, I bet I could build one at the end of it. It may not win awards, but it would certainly keep me warm and dry whenever we decided to go camping in it. And I think that web development is the same way. It just feels more mysterious because people don't have a vision for like themselves as computer programmer. But I remember when I was, I think, just out of college. So I was 22, and I was over at a friend's house watching her QA a credit card form for a car dealership. And I was like, how in the world can you possibly take a credit card payment on the internet? What in the world? It just blew my mind that she was able to code this thing. And now, with a few dozen payment gateway integrations under my belt, I realized, oh, it's not rocket science. You just have to understand what an API is and what not to do with the data, like retain plain text credit card information. Like I said, it's much more of a trade, I think, than like an engineering discipline. And unless you're gonna, if unless you're angling for a career where you're inventing an algorithm, or you're literally guiding rockets to a space station, or inventing self-driving algorithms, you probably don't need a traditional computer science degree. So save the money, take the shortcut, and get inspired.
Yeah, as I did, yeah, I think I so I must have left school when I was, I don't know, about 18 or something, I suppose. Just can't think about that far. But yeah, I ended up, I've done a little bit, I did a little bit of higher education afterwards, but not even as far as doing university degree. I did a HNC qualification after doing some other things, but that was in desktop support. That wasn't in software programming. So yeah, I'm self-taught developer and or community talk developer, I suppose. And yeah, I don't have a degree. And I always, when I look at people or job adverts, it's like, oh, we need a computer science degree or something. Like, do you really need it, or is it? I don't know. It's then again, we've got a graduate start on my team. She started in September, and yeah, I think it's a different way of getting to the same place. But I went through building essentially hobby projects and side projects. Did a one for the Taekwondo school I was training at the time, and did one for the cattery where our cat used to go when we were going away, and then started doing a bit of freelance work building. Which I think actually one of those was e-commerce, but my must have been it's like for bathroom hardware things. But yeah, they have pictures of taps and valves and things, and yeah, they give me the HTML and thing. I'd have to make it into a Drupal site, probably of some description. This is quite a while ago, so must have been Uber Cart back then. But yeah, it's just like that's how I got involved, and it's just yeah, they didn't maybe these sort of 16-week boot camps weren't a thing then, or at least I didn't know about them at the time. But definitely a different way into the industry, and seem to be so many of them at the moment when people come out with these skills that say they didn't have 16 weeks ago, and some of them are marketing managers, or some one guy's mentoring was he's a translator, so he'd go in to the code and put in the translations for words into different languages and things. But then say, oh, I could write some of the actual code in here as well. So people come from all different types of backgrounds and things into this new industry, which is really interesting.
Yeah, I love it.
So you mentioned OS Commerce. So I was going to ask, because I know you from we've mentioned Drupal Cart, we mentioned Drupal Commerce. So I then definitely think of you in the sort of e-commerce space. Like, how did you get into the? Is that purely from the OS Commerce site that
Yeah,
you
purely
in
from the
that
US
company?
Commerce side that I maintained. I would do light customizations for it. I actually built the very first QuickBooks web connector integration with anything. So it happened to be to OS Commerce. We called it like the QuickBooks importer service or something like that. But it was just it was using an XML bridge to connect to a desktop QuickBooks application. And we built that for Vidata Refrigeration. And then that turned me into Intuit's Geek of the Week, and I was hooked. Like, oh wow, I'm actually you can get recognition for this stuff. And I put up a blog post about it on my fresh new like Drupal 4.7 blog or something. And then the next week, somebody emails me looking for some additional support on some e-commerce. Like, oh my gosh, this is incredible. It's like my mind is just expanding, and these doors are being opened. And whenever my boss tasked me, and then my coworker Lyle Mantooth with porting OS Commerce into Drupal, that then became Uber Card, and we had a great time building that out. And I think the success of that project just more or less fueled the trajectory of my career as an open source e-commerce developer and project lead. Whenever we started Commerce Guys, I mean, my two original partners, I mean, the only reason that I partnered with them was because they sought me out as early Uber Card adopters. First for the company they worked for, which was a lighting company, and then for their own company, which was selling holiday LEDs, so like Christmas lights or LEDs, way before it was cool. It's probably like the first year I even remember seeing them in the hardware store. They were making a lot of money selling them through Uber Card, and we decided to join forces to create this consultancy. And we actually only maintained that for a year on our own before merging with the French team of AF83. Sorry, the Drupal team of the French agency AF83, after meeting them at DrupalCon Paris and deciding to do work together. And the whole rest is in like the commerce guy story of venture capital, investing in Drupal Commerce, investing in Commerce Kickstart. We actually tagged the 1.0 at DrupalCon London, if you were there in Croydon. Maybe that was a little before you came in. I think it was 2011.
Yeah, I wasn't there, but I remember being, it must have been, yeah, 2010 is when I went full time doing development. So I was there in house for a while and did some Ubercard there as well. But then, yeah, I was looking at doing a project. So it must have been 2011 when I moved to to the first agency I worked at. And we were evaluating some e-commerce there, and I remember being in the office and being, "Do we do this in Ubercart and Drupal 6 that we know that works, or they've just released this new thing that was Drupal Commerce and Drupal 7?" And
Risky
they
bet.
said, "Yeah, which ones?" And so ended up doing it on Ubercart. So I'd had experience with Ubercart from the job before. And I said, it must have been that freelance project I must have done, or a couple of them must have been Ubercart selling bathroom taps and things. So I was able to go in and talk about it, and the first full-time job I had was working for an equestrian TV channel, so all about horses and dressage and show jumping and everything. So they wanted to then introduce paid, I can't think whether it's memberships or paid events. I think I'm pretty sure it was. We had an event directory that people could go and post their events, but they wanted gold, silver, bronze type of things. We did that with Ubercart. Imagine they paid and we give them a new role or something that they could post. So I did that and then joined the agency after about a year of being in their place. And it was for a UK utilities company, a water company. And they were doing, they were, so people were, I think it was mostly B2B conveyancing and things. So people would apply for searches or something, some sort of search. So they'd upload all these documents as part of this application and they would pay for it, and it would then get sent off, and yeah, that was all built with Ubercart, and it was in production until quite recently, considering we're in 2024, a few years ago, but recently. But as far as I'm aware, it's within the last couple of years, it's been moved on to something else. But yeah, we built that on Ubercart. I remember being in the
I
office
believe it or
going,
not, we
"Can we
actually
do it?"
have a couple of Ubercard clients to this day. The once you get in thoroughly entrenched in a platform, I mean, oftentimes the cost to replatform outweighs the cost to just keep maintaining it in-house. There are certainly some security implications to that, but there are also ways to mitigate those security, implications. So it's interesting. Interesting world we live in.
Definitely. Yeah, Ubercart, I think in my mind was very like Drupal 5, Drupal 6, and then I feel like I went fairly clean over to Drupal Commerce then once I started doing more with Drupal 7. But was there ever an Ubercart for Drupal 7? Did I
There
seem
was,
to think people
some community.
tried?
After I left the company where we developed it and started Commerce Guys, a couple of community maintainers, continued to improve upon it. I think eventually they followed some of Drupal Commerce's footsteps in converting things to custom entity types and the like. But the advantage of starting from scratch on Drupal 7 was that was the first release of Drupal that introduced the entity API. So prior to that, basically any module ecosystem or contributor module that wanted to have like a custom data object just abused the node system. So you would turn a node into a product and then try to like disable the things you didn't want to see in it. Or you would use a node for a group, and it's just not, it's not clean. It's a node in Drupal is typically understood to be a piece of content that generally is publicly accessible, not a subsidiary part of another privately accessible, composite entity or something. Anyway, I like we had the entity API, we had the field system, no more CCK, and then we had rules, we had views, which was very advanced in Drupal 7. I remember there was a lot of heartache over the complexity added to the user interface, even of views. And so being able to start from scratch on all of these things, One, it actually made it hard to get a full commerce release because we were always aiming at a moving target. And eventually it took our CTO at Commerce Guys, Damian Tornier, who's now the CTO, still at platform.sh. It took him coming in kind of like in one sprint and one fell swoop, like re-architecting our various entity types that had been developed along the way as the entity API itself was developing. It took him basically giving it some focused attention to unify everything and get us out the door to that launch at DrupalCon London. I mean, at the end of the day, glad we had a clean start. And then we kind of took that same approach again when Drupal 8 rolled around. It's like, well, like here's the feature set, but that architecture also no longer applies. You know, the new architecture has config entity types and content entity types. Bundles are managed differently. They can come from plugins or they can come from config. You know, it's not just a matter of a few standard class objects being passed around here and there by reference, but everything is now an object, and we're going to use dependency injection from a service container. We're going to use, you know, plugins and event subscribers and the whole nine yards. I'll say, like, it was a fairly steep learning curve for me, not because any one concept was challenging, but just because, like, I was, you know, fully maintaining our Drupal 7, you know, code up until the hilt. You know, like, okay, you know, Boyan then took over advancement of Commerce Core. I think it was in the wake of DrupalCon Austin. I feel like he maybe started it around 2014. We started in with those libraries that existed outside of the Drupal ecosystem. Then we started building Commerce Core 2.x. And it just took me a while to get up to speed to become a proficient contributor all over again. But certainly feel like I certainly have a handle on it today. But it's also an undeniable, you know, massive leap forward in capability and speed to market for new features, certainly in onboarding people from external communities into a Drupal development environment, because they probably understand what a dependency injection container is, regardless of how much of a misnomer that is.
Yeah, it was a training session for something. It was a product we were going to use on a website, and it was all done in JavaScript, but it wasn't like didn't matter what it was written in really. But they started talking about event subscribers and things. And I'm like, oh, I know that because I've learned that on Symfonycast or something, and I remember seeing that. And yeah, to get away from some of these sort of Drupalisms of things like hooks and you know and everything, like to go to these more standard, I don't know whether paradigms is the right word, but or approaches. I think it's yeah, it should be in theory easier then for somebody who's worked on other things to go, oh yeah, I know how. Well, it's definitely with let's say Symfony and Laravel to go, oh, this is a service container. Right, we know what that is. You know, we get what dependency injection is. Whereas then
And
for
I
us
think
who have to
like event
move.
subscribers are going to be more familiar than like Drupal's hook system, you know.
Whereas I think for us who'd been in like the Drupal 5, 6, 7, he says like, yeah, how do we sort of translate X to Y? And I think we had to do a lot of relearning. But yeah, people coming in, maybe not so much. I just looked. There is
Hopefully.
a Drupal 7.x3.13 release if we can't. And there's
All
also an
right, they got up to the
8.x4.0 alpha 5 as well, which is interesting.
Yeah.
According to the Drupal.org page, it's still 12,000 sites reporting using it. So that's really interesting.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, I don't know what versions of Mario Kart you've played, but at some point, maybe it was on the Nintendo 64, but maybe it was after that, you have this thing where, like, you can do the race. And then you can race again to beat your time, right? And you're racing against your ghost. That's often what it's felt like, you know, like with developing the whole commerce ecosystem with Uber Cart still existing. It's like, well, I can't kill it. If community members wanted to take it on and take on the main, it's going to continue to exist. And if there's 10,000 of anybody out there, like, people are going to want to pay for support. And even though the module is technically, I mean, you look at the project page, like you said, it's no longer developed by its maintainers. Nobody's responding. You know, the last release for the Drupal 7 branch was in 2019. The Drupal 8 branch 2016, and yet I guarantee you somebody's out there making hundreds of thousands of dollars supporting these Uber Cart users, if not more. And I think that the challenge is how do we convince these folks to invest in an upgrade that doesn't just see them jettison Drupal entirely and go to BigCommerce or Shopify, WooCommerce, or something else that's perceived to be cheaper and easier to run, even if it isn't. And that really is the vision behind Commerce Kickstart. I'm sure you're familiar with our distribution. We first developed it, and I think our first release was in 2012. I think this is part of that whole like VC fueled expansion of the community, so that we need a version of Drupal Commerce that you can just install, and it looks like a store with demo content and with one click of a button. And we carried that forward to Drupal 10 as well. I mean, Commerce Kickstart 3.0 exists, but now it's a composer project template, not necessarily a Drupal distribution in the old understanding of things. But the idea is, if you want to convince these people to migrate, you have to show them a easy path from point A to point B that doesn't cost $100,000. Because many of them, they're there because they're small stores and they can't afford to move, or there's others that are large and entrenched, and the cost will be very costly. So how can you accelerate that? And so I think the starting point is, let's have Commerce Kickstart 3.0 present a like for like target for an Uber cart user to migrate into, and then let's make sure that the Commerce Migrate Uber cart module just works, you know. But there are some real differences in product architecture between them. The most notable being that we formalized the relationship between products and product variations in a way that frankly few platforms have. It's not to say that others don't do this, but the idea is, you are forced to explicitly define every variation of a product that might exist based on attribute selections, whereas other platforms will treat it more anonymously. In Uber Card, it was anonymous. You had the ability to attach attributes and options to any product display page so they can be selected in the add to cart form, but only if you put in SKUs for different combinations would it even assume there was a different SKU. Whereas now we require that. We say, no, you must define this. And if you want an option that doesn't change the variation, well, in that case, that's a customization. That's a configuration option that goes on an order item. It's not attached to a product. It's just part of the resulting order item that just gets embedded into the add to cart form. And so like that difference alone, I mean, it like multiplies the complexity of migrating from point A to point B, because your entity architecture is very different, your assumptions are very different. And I suppose the best we could do would be to just like auto-generate SKUs where the Uber Cart site was not using distinct SKUs. But then that brings up its whole own maintenance burden besides. Like, oh geez, now I have to sort this out as the end user. So there's other major differences, obviously, but that one's one of the most notable. But there's also just the fact that like the tooling today is so much better. Like, imagine building a custom search interface in Drupal 6 or even in Drupal 7, and not having search API as advanced as it is today. And you essentially would want to rebuild that from scratch. I would. I don't think it would be worth trying to just like do a like for like port. But yeah, a lot of challenges.
Yeah, I remember using Commerce Kickstart back in Drupal 7. I was maintaining a few client projects on it. So some of your typical sort of bookstore or something, fairly typical commerce application that was on Drupal Commerce and Commerce Kickstart. Yeah, so I remember contributing some patches as well, just to bump the core version at some point, just because Drupal core had a new version. And we had to, presumably it was Drush Make back then as well. So yeah, update the make file and submit a patch back to the project just to update the
Yeah.
version of core that was there. Is that tooling? Like now it's all composer driven, but that wasn't a thing back then. I
Yeah.
keep saying back then like it was a long time ago. I suppose it might be relatively speaking, but
10 years,
my
give or
brain is a
take,
while
yeah.
ago. Yeah, I think one thing I quite like about commerce is like its flexibility. So I was saying about bookstore, online bookstore, but some of the things I've been doing with commerce quite recently was I built a photography competition site with Drupal Commerce.
Nice.
So when they have one product, which is the competition, and they have a different SKU for every year, that was the easiest way I think we thought to do it. And then people enter the competition by essentially placing an order against that variation, attaching all their photos to it. And then I've done some custom things to allow scoring against it, and this all, this different jurors and everything. So they looked at moving to something like Shopify, and I was like, because they did for their main site, and yeah, I said, well, yeah, that would work for like for your other thing, which is ironically another bookstore. But yeah, for this, you wouldn't get custom judging back end or the other bits. I built around it, so I think they're still using that, and I've got quite a phase sophisticated Drupal commerce thing for a gadget insurance client. Yeah, so that we had a lot of SKUs for each sort of different model and different variations, whether it was full cover or basic cover or this or that, and built a custom sort of front end on front of it, on the front of it. So it was a sort of Vue.js form that people would pick all their gadgets. It made the cart for them in the background, and yeah, it was all really cool. So yeah, it's like it's that it doesn't have to be just a t-shirt shop or a bookshop, but you can use it for some quite adventurous sort of out of the box type things. Interesting pun.
Yeah,
Yeah.
definitely. I've seen some crazy stuff built with it.
Oh, another thing about Commerce Kickstart. I was doing some work with a client recently, and doing a Drupal site build for them, but they do some e-commerce as well. And they said, we've got this plugin, this quote generator thing that we've already got. We need an example store so we can show it to, I don't know, Apple or Amazon or somewhere, some of those big companies. Can you set something up for us? And I'm like, yeah, I've got, we use Drupal Commerce, Kickstart and D10. I've got some Docker projects on GitHub. So I did a Drupal Commerce Kickstart one when I was in Lille in the little area. So I've got that working now. So just like I'll use that and that for those two together, and
Great.
apparently demoed it and got this work from whichever Apple or Amazon or whoever it was. Yeah, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
Just
that's the goal. I
thought.
mean, it really is a sales accelerator. If you're in marketing, you talk about the targeting the evaluator persona, and it's very much a development tool, but it's also a tool for developers to walk evaluators through a solution and to see something, and I like the fact that I can go into any sales demo. And with maybe an hour or two's worth of preparation, I can actually demonstrate a tailored demo that maybe even has some unique or custom features that you would not find in any other platform, thanks to the versatility of the underlying Drupal application framework, that whole entity relationship model and configuration management and the whole nine yards. So I like the. It's hard to sell flexibility because merchants don't want to buy flexibility, right? Nobody's out there shopping. Well, what I really want to make sure is that the platform that I choose is the most flexible on the market. I do believe we are one of the most flexible on the market, but that doesn't sell, right? So you have to tailor the sales message a little bit differently, but much better to be super flexible and then present a trimmed down feature set to a specific target audience than to start with that target audience, and then it's like, oh, geez, how do I reverse engineer flexibility into this platform now that I've accidentally developed with artificial constraints? And you mentioned like Shopify earlier. It's kind of like, well, Shopify, you can build anything you want to on top of it, but essentially you're bolting on functionality via some JavaScript library and a third-party API. You're not actually altering the core data model. You're not changing the database architecture. And that, at a certain point, you have to be able to do that. Or at the very least, if you can't, then it increases your development cost to add new features. There's a ton of differences between the platforms, but being a native extension of Drupal, I think, has a lot more advantages and pros than it does cons.
Yeah, thinking back, I might be wrong on this, but I feel like Ubercart was a bit more batteries included, and it was more this is what it does out of the box, maybe a bit more like a bit more set
Yeah,
out of the
absolutely.
box. And
Yeah.
then commerce was more flexible. Yeah, you did a little bit more setup, I think, to begin with, but then you sort of had an option to plug it together the way you wanted it to, instead of being this is how we've decided it works, take it or leave it almost,
Yeah.
maybe.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, the main challenge was always basically forcing the site builder to think about the product architecture for themselves and pick the one that best suited them. That was always the sticking point. And then, beyond that, I think that was the main limitation. I mean, at the end of the day, with once you get past that in Commerce 2, you're off to the races. You have a full order management backend. You have a drag and drop checkout flow editor. You have the ability to install a module and turn on new functionality. But yeah, there's less in that core package. There is no UC file in the core, right? Like we always had, we had a lot of stuff in the core Ubercar project that we put into contributed projects in the 2.x cycle, just so they could develop at their own pace, and so that you, I mean, we constantly had this problem in Ubercart where like, well, we need to roll a new release because we fixed a bug, a critical bug in this payment gateway module. Oh no, we can't because this workover in this module is only half finished, and so until we finish that, we can't tag a new release. Oh no. So we separated a lot of concerns, and then we use that project template to draw it back together. So like the Commerce Kickstart project template will fetch what we would consider like Centauro certified projects. It's the contributed projects that we maintain that add new subsystems like Commerce Shipping, or Commerce License, or Commerce Recurring. They're maintained to work well together and with everything in Commerce Core, but they're not core features of the framework. And within Commerce Kickstart itself, the installation profile, we can ship default configuration that anybody can take and use to basically like pick a starting paradigm. Do I need just a simple product data architecture? Do I need a product with attributes? Okay, click this, install that config, see how it's done. Then I can either edit that and make it my own, or I can, recreate it from scratch. There's still a lot to be figured out, I think, in the distribution space in D10. But the idea behind it is that if you just wanted to use Commerce Kickstart's product architecture as it's delivered, then you would install it once, and then we would have update hooks anytime we made a change to the configuration to try to reconcile those differences. But if you want to customize it at all, then you'd want to clone at that point and have your off ramp. So then you're now responsible for that configuration. So I think the idea was always like, well, if I can inspect the fingerprint of your configuration for this product type, and I can see that it hasn't changed since the last time we had a release, then cool, I know you haven't customized it. I can now apply updates to it to bring it in line with the current version of that config. That was the vision. It's yet to become a full reality, but it's just that challenge in Drupal 10. Like once your site owns your configuration, what do you do? But it's not a problem that we alone face. Any contributed module in Drupal 10 that ships default config, if they then want to make a change based on their default config, well, you can't really just safely blindly apply that to a view or an entity type or whatever it is that that config relates to. So.
Yeah, you mentioned libraries, PHP libraries earlier on. I was looking at, remember seeing Boyan give a talk at one of the DrupalCons about how that was put together. And you mentioned releases. And I think it was, oh, yeah, we did do a, a release every month, every other week. I think Centauro or Commerce guys were quite ahead of the time almost. So the way that they adopted some of those approaches and from a like from a release cycle perspective, or just like, well, we're gonna make these separate libraries, just standalone PHP libraries. The Commerce guys addressing one looks like it's over 17 million downloads and 900 stars and things. But yeah, it was quite like I hadn't really seen anybody sort of take that sort of approach before. So that was quite really interesting. I remember when we come away from that and saying, oh, that's a really interesting idea. And then like I can also see someone's done a bridge then between Commerce guys addressing and Symfony, which I think it wouldn't have been a thing. Like if all that logic was just inside the address module, then yeah, you couldn't, it offers other ways of extending it to other things outside of Drupal even. Really
Yeah,
interesting.
I think maybe even another e-commerce platform was maybe using our taxing library, where we were defining and maintaining tax rates for European VAT. I can't remember off the top of my head, but if it wasn't that one, it was a different one. It may have been Foxycard. It was some other PHP-based e-commerce platform. And our vision at the time was basically to go the next step of getting off the Drupal island. That was a big theme for a
Definitely.
while. We were trying to kill the not invented here syndrome within the Drupal community by using external resources. And maybe we went a little hog wild at the buffet, but still, like we ended up with a good project, a better project because of it. But we weren't necessarily thinking about exports. So we imported a lot. Well, we were like, hey, you know what? We actually can export some domain knowledge here, particularly around addressing internationalization for currency, specifically like currency localization, right? Because the euro is going to be formatted differently based on the country that you're rendering the price in. An address form is going to be rendered with a different order for the fields, not just labels, but order. And validation rules based on the country. They'll even be different based on the locale within the country, right? So if I'm rendering an address form for a Chinese address, but it's in English, then it might have one sort order for the field. But if my label is in language of Chinese, it might be the reverse, right? From most specific to the least. But yeah, it's that kind of a thing. And that was, I mean, just really cool to see it get so big. I honestly had no clue until this call that we were at 17 million for the addressing library. But I think it's been good. I think the other aspect of this is that Composer allowed us to separate our projects out. It allowed us to separate concerns and then to define the constraints that are safe for updates. So if you wanted to update to the latest version of all of these addressing rules or tax rules, which are bound to change on a different schedule than we have core releases, it's all safe. as long as we're following the major minor version constraints as expected by semantic versioning, it's safe.
Yeah, you're still releasing interesting things. I saw a screenshot of a new dashboard or overview page that was released. Was that put me back in December? Am I getting
Yes, it was
fairly recently?
December 31st on New Year's Eve. We
Oh,
packaged it
recent.
up.
That was cool.
Yeah,
Yes.
we've had two challenges within the Commerce 2.x cycle, and really we had these in the Commerce 1.x cycle as well. But specifically in Commerce 2.x, we began developing a commerce reporting module, but it was never like a full-on sales dashboard like we had in Commerce 1. And the reason for that was we don't think that the Drupal database is necessarily the right place for people to be denormalizing the data that then they use to generate these reports. Because inevitably you would get a large amount of data in a Drupal site, you'd go to load up your sales dashboard and views would just die. It would just kill your site. You'd have to up your memory limit to some ungodly amount and hope that things, didn't crash. And the problem with this is not just that it's a bad experience for the merchant, but if they're bringing down the whole site, then any customer that's in the process of buying, is disrupted
The
by a
knock-on
sales
effect, yeah.
dashboard. And so we began a different approach, but we have it just never came to fruition. There's reasons, but the dashboard now supplies at least a beginning point. It's the sales metrics and basic reports of things that we can safely extract from the database, that we can cache, that we can ensure are not going to take down the site whenever they're accessed. And in an extremely high volume scenario, we have an easy way to disable the things that are non-performant in any given environment. But the vision for that is ultimately to resurrect a product that we had developed for an enterprise customer several years ago, but had the Deadpool due to our underlying infrastructure, like 10xing their cost on us. But it's a full sales and analytics dashboard that just uses a document DB like Mongo to store denormalized transaction details that can then be mined for interesting data for that merchant. So they own their data and can basically create like a web analytics dashboard without having to depend on a third party like Google or whomever. So that's interesting. The other problem that we're trying to solve with the dashboard is actually reaching merchants, right? Because the typical cycle for I think a Drupal commerce store is either somebody built it and then moved on to the next project, and the merchant is just running it for years on their own, Or maybe a merchant built it for themselves because they had some technical competency in-house, but don't know where to go next. Maybe they don't know why they should, upgrade immediately to the new version, right? We still have security advisories every now and then impact us. We needed some way to push a message out, even if it's anonymous, right? Like we don't have any way to connect to every merchant in Drupal Commerce, but by creating a dashboard that has a sort of pseudo inbox in it, we can now push these messages out. And I think primarily we will use this to message from update hooks and install hooks, right? Whenever you install the new module, we can create a message in the inbox that gives pointers on how to configure it and where to go to do more. Or it has like a wizard-like interface for finalizing the configuration of a module. But we also have created just a light project feed where we could push out an update that is not dependent on new code being installed. And that's to attempt to say to merchants that say are on a compromised version, hey, like you need to upgrade your Drupal Commerce site. If you contact your service provider, if you need support, we're here for you. But at the very least, make this happen. Or if Drupal itself has some, that's the idea. It's essentially following the announcements module in core, the model that we have established in core. Now it's an experimental module that you can enable, and it just consumes an RSS feed or maybe a JSON feed from Drupal.org to embed a blog post links basically in the admin interface. We just kind of made it as like a project JSON feed of messages that get ingested. So I'm excited to see where it can go. And frankly, I'm excited to see what other people do with it, right? If you have a contributed module that maybe provides some useful like statistic or could be used to enhance the dashboard, I think it'd be great to see these things become incorporated into that dashboard.
You've just gone over $1 million in sales. I mean, big announcement over the top of the dashboard or something would be awesome.
And it's one of those things that's like was always just kind of silly that we didn't have it, right? Because every other platform in the world has a sales dashboard in the back end of their website. And we alone did not. So we're solving that now.
And obviously you mentioned service providers. So Centauro itself offers services and support and things around Drupal
Yes,
Commerce,
sir.
obviously. I know there's some others who do as well. Is there, in the same way, there's a Drupal supporting partners list on a Drupal.org? Have you got like a commerce partners list or anything else people would
Not
obviously look at, or
particularly.
just curious?
I think, mostly, folks come to us when they just need support, and we do a lot of interagency support, but it's a bit more informal at present. We're looking at formalizing that into like a prefix menu of services, right? Where you say, hey, like I have a commerce project coming up, and I need help to make sure it's a good, win for the platform and for my client. I say, cool, like if it's a small, medium, or large, you buy this package and you get X, Y, and Z services included, and our promise to you that this will make a project successful. But we don't have the reverse yet, where say we're just overwhelmed by a glut of leads that we can't handle and need to establish a partner network to pursue delivery there. I think if we can successfully create service packages and successfully create products like an enhanced analytics platform that partners can sell, and we get our revenue from those, then great. I mean, we don't have to do a particular kind of service. I don't have to do full builds internally, and we could take those to other agencies in a true partner program fashion. But we're just not there yet. Hopefully, that comes with time.
Yeah, the other thing I just thought about was all about sort of a Drupal Commerce certification. Like you got the Acquia certified Drupal people, like what about having Centauro certified commerce developers or something? I don't know. Interesting idea.
The one thing, and we've recently been discussing this with some US agencies, with some Acquia partners in Europe, and trying to think through like what is important for people to know before they dig in, right? And for me, I think if I could just reduce the number of times that people shoot themselves in the foot with early architectural decisions, That would be my certification program. Like, do you know at what point you should stop using the add to cart form or the shopping cart block or the shopping cart form? Do you know at what point you should not use views to accomplish a specific task, but should instead decouple that component and use JavaScript and the REST API? Because those are the kinds of things that ultimately kill sites once they reach scale, right? Like, maybe the problems aren't evident at the beginning, but once they take off, they start to hit these real bottlenecks and they freak out and want to leave the platform. And we had this back in the day. I can't name the customer, but it was one of the major recording labels in the United States. And they just couldn't keep their artist websites online. And so they made this a priori decision before contacting us to migrate to Magento, because they hired a consultant probably for $400 an hour who said, "You need Magento." And without really analyzing their current challenges or their future ambitions. And as soon as we took a look at their database, said, "Oh, well, hey, like, we just need to change your transaction isolation level here from what read to recommitted or whatever the classic change is in Drupal." And boom, it's fine. Everything works great. We suddenly 10x your throughput. No more crashes when that artist puts out an Instagram photo, But by that point, there's that sunk cost fallacy. Oh, we're already so far down the path of this. We spent all this money with this consultant and we've begun the migration. We can't turn back now. And so if we could reduce the number of times that agencies introduce those kinds of problems, that is how I would certify somebody. That and probably product and search architecture are the two main things that we see can really hurt a site. One time, we came across a Drupal commerce site, and this was in D7, but it probably had like 100 product types in it. And if you know anything about the field architecture in Drupal 7, you understand that you now have this massive field info and field instance info array that gets loaded and deserialized on every single page request, and that just kills Memcache amongst other things. Never mind, just requires that much more memory per process to process a page request. And the reality was, in that particular project, they did not need to be using bundles for what they were using them for, which was a sort of a vain attempt to reproduce the architecture of their ERP like for like in Drupal, when those data points weren't necessarily even required by Drupal, either for display purposes or search faceting purposes. So it's like you have to know where is Drupal going to break down when you're planning your product and search architecture, or again, once you get five people on the website at a time, down it goes. Was it recently, and we had a customer that had 100 gigabytes of form cache table bloat. Like, hey, like,
Oh, yeah.
there are ways to prevent this from happening. I don't think cron is running. Hey, and
Yeah,
by the way,
cash form is always one that gets quite large, isn't it, from quite commonly. Yeah.
so.
What's good? Is there anything coming up next for commerce? Have you got a, is there a public roadmap for commerce, or is there something you've got internally, anything you
Oh
can
man,
sort of share? What's the next thing?
as public as it gets. I mean, there is no like private one that's more detailed or whatnot, but it's essentially continued improvements to the order management interface. I don't want merchants to wince when they look at the back end. Specifically, the shipment interface is appalling right now. We really need to improve that, and we need to bring a lot of our shipping ecosystem up to date with full releases. First class integrations with the various carriers and shipment APIs. So that's the biggie. There's some more comprehensive changes we would like to see, like a sort of re-architected payment API. There are some definite challenges in the current architecture, but those are breaking changes. And so we really need to be prepared, in a sense, to pause forward progress for a while we re-architect these portions of the back end. And that's just going to take time. So in the meantime, we're kind of focusing more on more impactful things. Like the limitations in the payment API can be worked around, and very few merchants will ever bump up against them. But the limitations in the order management interface impact just about everybody. And we want people to love using the back end of commerce. Additionally, like I said, we're redeveloping what was previously marketed as Lean Commerce Reports. We first launched that, I think, at DrupalCon Seattle, maybe, in 2019. But we are rebuilding that. We will call it Centauro Insights, And the big idea there is just it's your own, analytics dashboard baked into the back end of Commerce. So you can do things like, hey, what's my conversion funnel look like? How is my conversion rate changing month over month? What about my organic search traffic compared against my social media referral traffic? How do those conversion rates compare? Those are the kinds of questions that I think any marketer wants to know, and they shouldn't have to go find and bolt on a third party platform to get those answers. But it's also the kind of tool that unfortunately becomes really expensive really fast, because even if they start small, they eventually move up the value chain to where they're charging 500, $1,000 a month for the service. I'd love to have at least a cheaper version of the service that maybe just decreases the amount of compute we do, so there is no holistic conversion funnel, but you can at least see a conversion rate by comparing your total number of sessions against your total number of conversions. That's easy enough to do without a full click path analytics. But then, we'd still love to target the high end as well. But that to me is most interesting when you get into predictive analytics and pairing that with the REST API capabilities of Drupal Commerce. So for example, and this is just crazy vision casting. There's no meat here yet. But if we have that click path level data, then we can know when a customer is about to bounce. And if we know they're about to bounce based on their interaction with the website, but maybe that's the point where we can trigger a component on the page to offer an ad, or hey, use this promotion, get this free shipping, use this coupon code now to get 15% off, but it's only good for the next hour. Whatever it is that keeps them on the site, and maybe allays a fear, a concern they have, or gets them to make that purchasing decision. If we can unlock that, I mean that has again export potential out of the Drupal community to other platforms. I think Drupal Commerce will be a fun test bed for some of that functionality. But step one is just, man, we've got to have a sales graph. We've got to have exportable reports for sales, for sales by customer, for sales by product. They need to be filterable month to month, year to year, whatever the case may be. So we'll start there, and then we'll see how far up market we can go with it.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing some of those things land in commerce when they're ready. It's been
Yeah.
a really, really great conversation. I feel like there's probably a few more things we probably could cover, but I think we're probably up to time. Where can people find you online if they want to find out more about yourself or Drupal Commerce or Centauro?
So I'm probably most active on Twitter or X at Ryan Zarama. Usually anything that I'm posting to Centauro or Drupal Commerce or personal blogs and sites is going to end up being what is it, aggregated or synchronized there, or syndicated there. But I also will occasionally have threads or other thoughts that don't rise to the level of a blog post that end up there as well. Of course, you can find us in the Drupal Slack in the Commerce channel. I'm pretty active in there, and so is most of the team. And I'm also pretty active in Drupal Answers. If you just have a Stack Exchange style need, if you use the Commerce tag in Drupal Answers, I'm likely to see it. And if I have the time, I'm there to answer as well. So those are the main places.
It's also videos about Little League baseball going on your Twitter feed as well, which is cool. Okay, awesome. Thanks, Ryan, for taking the time. Thanks everyone for listening to the Beyond Blocks podcast. I've been Oliver Davis. Thank you, Ben.